Council meeting June 21st, 2016. Roll call, Ms. Smoot.
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, Gamble, Scarborough, and Cuddeback.
Okay, council member Rasmussen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Under announcements and presentations, we have the Snohomish County PUD, District Number 1. Welcome.
Well, good evening, Council. It's my pleasure to be here and honored. I want to make a few comments first, and then if you had a chance to go through the presentation and get looked at it, or will this be the first time you've seen it?
This will be the first time.
Okay, all right. I'll go through it whatever pace you want, ask any questions as we go through it. But I wanted to start out, I brought a whole bunch of people with you, not a whole bunch, but three folks I want to introduce you to. Thank you. First, I'd like to introduce you to Shane Mahoney. Shane, stand up. Shane's our Monroe manager, so he is kind of our full-time resident management person who's here. He oversees our crews that we have up here, our designers, and our front counter operation. So anybody that you see that's one of our local folks here, they work for Shane. Now Shane is, I've been here 7 years, so I'll talk to that in a little bit, but Shane is the third manager up here that I've had the pleasure to work with. So we've had Gabe Brown and Irene Hensey, you may know them. And Shane is now our manager up here. The second person I want to introduce you to is Mike Munsterman. Mike?
Great haircut, huh?
We don't sit together because the glare gets in. Thanks, Mike. Mike is our manager of vegetation management, or as I like to call him, our director of branch operations. He's the guy that's in charge of clearing all the trees in the entire district. So one of the reasons that I asked him here is if you guys have questions about detail, questions about contracts, he's the right person to answer it, not me. I can answer the general stuff. And the third person I'd like to introduce you to is Brenda White. Brenda is our governmental relations representative, so she's the one who actually got me in contact with the right people so that we could come up here tonight. So with that, thank you very much. These three folks represent a few of the 1,000 employees that we have at Snohomish PUD. Like I said, I've been here for 7 years, and that makes me a rookie at the district, but I've been in the power business for 35 years. So this is my third utility. I worked for Seattle City Light before this, and before that, a very large utility down in California. So I've been in public power about 10 years, and I was with Investor Owns for about 25. So, like I said, when you want to know about utilities, you can ask me. You've got a pretty good chance I can answer it. If you want detailed history about the district and what happened here 25 years ago, I'm not the right person to talk to. So what I wanted to do was kind of give you an overview, and I guess backstory is we got a letter that was a very concerned citizen, happened to be our council member here, Council Member Gamble, and I wrote a letter back kind of explaining what was going on, but I thought it'd be better if I actually came up and walked people through. Because one thing the district is good at is getting a lot of things done. What we're not good at is telling people that we're doing it. So a lot of things happen, nobody really knows it, and so my purpose today partially is just to share that. So the district, I don't know if you guys know how we're set up. We're a not-for-profit, publicly owned and publicly run state-level incorporated business. So we're governed by three commissioners who are directly elected by our customer owners. And the commission meeting was today. We have them every other Tuesday. And you guys are all welcome to come down and say hello if you want to. I really would love it. We have about 340,000 customers in Snohomish County and Camino Island. We've got about 10,000, a little bit more, up in this area here. So, kind of with that backdrop, we got a letter about reliability, and I wanted to come up and tell you what's going on with reliability. So first of all, the two outages that you had in April and May, and I know we had one over the weekend also, but the two we had in April and May I wanted to talk about because they were kind of the triggering events, and that was after a pretty bad year. 2015 was a pretty bad year, and I do want to talk about that. The way that we have the circuits configured right now, we have two substations that feed the city of Monroe and the surrounding areas. Out of those substations, we've got a little bit more than a dozen high voltage circuits, 12,000 volt circuits. And they run through the city of Monroe and they serve the surrounding area. The city of Monroe is doing a street improvement project, and we had to de-energize one of those circuits, and it's carried on another circuit. Normally, you guys wouldn't even see that. You wouldn't know what happened, unless there's an outage, because then we don't lose one circuit, we lose two. So instead of 1,200 customers out, we had 2,500 out in both those outages. So, you know, my apologies for that. When we have circuits tied together like that, we do that in spring and summer because loads are down and it doesn't cause any overloads. But when you do that and there's a tree problem or a pothole, you do run into the kinds of outages that we saw in April. In fact, our circuits are still configured that way. So this first part of the presentation, these are all of the outages that are non-storm related. So you can see the laser pointer here. So these dots right here, each one of these is an outage. And the bigger the dot, the more customers that were involved in the outage. The key here, and I think you guys are going to have this presentation, so you'll be able to look at it at your leisure. The key is if they're green, they were tree caused. If they were blue, I can't remember what the blue ones were. I think they were the car poles. And that's how our planning engineers segregate them out. So we look at what causes these outages, and then if it's tree, we have to go back and trim. And if it's car pole, obviously we replace the pole. Mm-hmm. That's a whole blown outage. The picture changes pretty dramatically when you include storms. And here's the picture from the beginning of last year till up to about the middle of last week. And these are the outages that we had. So I just want to say a couple things about 2015. In 2015, we had the two largest storms in the district's history, period. When we had the August 31st storm, we thought that was the storm to end all storms. It broke all the records. It was bigger than the inaugural day storm. It's not going to be topped for another 25 years. The record stood for about 3 months. And then November 17th, we had the largest storm in the district's history at that point. I'm hopeful that's the record. That record will stand for a long time because, as you guys know, we lost about a little more than two-thirds of all of our customers were out of power, many for as much as 5 days. So those were severe outages. We had both those outages, we had around 200,000. The November one, we had about 220,000 customers out of power out of 340,000. So that was a really damaging series of storms. And then in January, we had a pretty good size storm, January 2015. We had another one in January 2016, and then two pretty good sized back-to-back ones in March of 2016. So all of those contributed to outages that you saw here in the surrounding area and frankly throughout the district. So when you think about an electrical system, when you look at an overhead system, there's different parts to it. What you're trying to do is provide a metallic conductive path from the generator to the meter. That's really what an electrical system is. Forget about the transformers for a minute and all that. But what you're trying to do is essentially hook the generator to the meter and send power down the conductive path. Well, the bad news about conductive paths is they like to conduct. And so that means you have to keep them insulated and isolated. And to insulate them, you put them on insulators on the pole tops, or you put them in insulated cable if you put them underground. And to isolate them, you usually get them up away from things, right? Or you bury it. Those are the two things, insulation and isolation. And when you think about a circuit going out, what usually happens is either the insulation or the isolation, or both, break down. So insulation can go bad on cable. Poles can rot. Poles can get hit by cars, and that brings the wire down. Or trees can drop branches or literally guillotine through the lines. So we do a lot of things at the district to try and maintain reliability. We trim trees, we replace cable, we replace poles. We relocate poles if they're in bad locations and they're repeatedly hit by cars. We do all that kind of work all the time, and it's stuff that you generally don't see. So what I want to do now now is kind of walk through what we've done in your area, just so that you know the last couple of years what's been going on here. So all these different dots represent jobs that we've done in the area. So these reddish dots here are pole replacement jobs. Those aren't individual poles. Each one of those jobs can be 20 or 30 poles. So they kind of represent areas. So on these streets, I can pretty much guarantee we replaced all the poles up and down them. And then as you can see, and we go through and test our poles every 10 years. Every pole gets tested and then it gets treated, if it's still treatable. If it's not treatable, we book it for replacement and it's replaced that year or at latest the next year. There's very few utilities out there, none that I know of, that have a really good pole replacement program except the Snowpipe. We do that. We also replace cable. We do, so these are cable jobs. The green ones, like right in there. We figure out what cable is about to fail and try and replace it before it fails. It's always better than replacing it after it fails. When the cable fails, customers are going to be out for anywhere 8 to 16 hours. And that's if we can get a crew there right away. So if there's anything else going on, it can be even longer. So underground failures are far more time intensive to fix than overhead failures. So what we do is we track the cable. And you know by what kind of cable it is, who made it, what year it was installed, how it was installed, is it in conduit, did they have 5-foot radius bends, et cetera, et cetera. You can figure out which cables are going to fail next. And we've done it. So we spend about $10 million a year replacing cable. We spend about $6 million a year replacing poles in the district. We also trim trees. We trim trees a lot. So these were the circuits that we trimmed in 2014. And these are the ones in 2015. Our annual tree trimming budget is about $6 million, more or less. And in the Monroe area, we spent a little bit over $1 million in those 2 years. So proportionally, it was a little bit more than we spent elsewhere. But, you know, if you look around, this is a beautiful, wooded, rolling hill area. And if you've got power lines in an area like that, you're going to spend some money trimming trees. And that's exactly what we do. We try and get through and trim every circuit every 5 years, and every transmission, that's our 115,000 volt circuits, every 3 years. If the transmission goes out, we have tens of thousands of customers go out. If the distribution circuit goes out, it's thousands. We're building a new transmission line and putting in a new, we're calling it a new substation. It's not really a new substation. It's a ring bus that we're putting in at Woods Creek. Now, what a ring bus does is it allows us to switch between sources without ever interrupting customers. So it's a really superior way of busing an electrical circuit. And we're doing it wherever we have a lot of transmission lines or critical distribution loads. So Woods Creek is next on the list. We're going to be spending, gosh, I want to say it's $16 million, $18 million, $18.5 million on the transmission line, and about $5 million on the substation work. The work will be done in about 2022. So this is, it takes a while. The transmission line, part of it is you got to get right of ways and go through all that. And it takes about 5 years to get them sited, and we're well into that process now. So those are going to start up pretty quickly. The other thing that we're doing is we're replacing the substations themselves. They have old electromechanical relays, and we're changing them out to all solid-state Schweitzer relays, which allows us to really take advantage of a lot of the settings and make the substations more reliable. It also gives a lot more information about when an outage happens and what caused it. Another thing that we do typically is, you see it up at the north end here, we're putting in a tie to Lake Chaplin substation. And bring in more circuits to an area. Right now we've got Monroe, West Monroe, and Woods Creek. The main links, West Monroe and Woods Creek substations feed the Monroe area. Oddly, the Monroe substation does not, but he has the main. And this will allow us to bring in power from Lake Chaplin. So it's just another way to bring power into the area, which improves reliability. So So back in, on the tree trimming, we cleared the area out in 2014 and 15. We're going to be back in 18, starting over again. So it's not a five-year cycle up here. We're doing about every 3 years. But part of that is prep work for a lot of association and transmission line work that we're doing. So we take advantage of the fact we're going to have capital work going on to clear out some of the right-of-ways. Some of the other things that we do, and you guys see this a lot, we hook up a lot of customers. Even at the depths of the recession, this is one of the few utilities in the nation that's hooking up a couple thousand customers a year. We're back up to about 4,000 customers a year, 300 of which, this is last year's numbers, were here in Monroe. So we're also building out the system at the same time that we're rebuilding the system. And that's just something that we do all the time. We also work with folks to help them buy less of our stuff. I don't know if Walmart would do that for you. But we do. We like it. And our answer here is, if we have to go out in the market and buy marginal power, potentially it could, you know, cause a carbon source to be used. And we're not sure we like that. But it's going to be the most expensive power out there because it's the marginal power. So for us, our answer is really simple. We want to fulfill all of our new load growth requirements with either conservation or with renewables, preferably renewables here. So that's what we've worked on. This is an example of how you help somebody not buy our stuff. If you conserve it, that means we don't have to buy it. So this really is something that offsets our costs. So what does it mean for the city of Monroe? It's about $100,000 a year on your power bills. And these are city accounts. So this doesn't include the homeowners and the businesses and everybody else out there. I mean, these are city accounts and in the school district and the correction facility. And these are folks that have done a lot of conservation work with over the years. We're going to continue to do that. And last but not least, you know, I started talking about great folks that I work with here. I'm really honored. It's just a pleasure to work with them. One of the things that, when you think about community and how we serve the community, is where we are in the community. And right now we have a headquarters here in downtown Monroe that is completely obsolete. It's probably not a great neighbor if you're next to it. Those trucks fire up in the middle of the night in a storm to go out and help people. You know, it's not a great thing. Getting in and out of there is rather difficult. But we know we need to have a headquarters up here. So a few years ago, we were looking for a location, and we found one on Churning Place. And about the same time we started working with the city of Monroe on permits and how we were going to set that up, we found out that there was a grant opportunity that the city of Monroe could partake in with the federal government to improve Churning Place. And we just needed some willing partners. Well, for us, the idea is, all right, this is great. We'll actually get a through road between, is it Chain Link and Woods Creek Road? To get a through road there right in front of our new service center that we get to build right in Monroe. So it's, you know, part of our long-term commitment to the community is to build a new service center here and keep our folks based here. We're also looking at making it a dual-purpose service center and moving our hydro headquarters here. So all the folks that run, Jackson Project, Youngs Creek, Woods Creek, and then ultimately Hancock, California, and East County, headquartered right here in Monroe. So the grants, here's what that looked like. You guys kicked in about $750,000. We kicked in about $1 million. We got a federal grant for the rest. And we both got a great road out of the deal. So we do a lot of work. We do a lot of work together. And again, my apologies for having outages in the first place. We never liked that. We're doing a lot of stuff to make it better. I can't promise that there won't be outages. In fact, I can't promise there will be outages. But all the things that we're doing will make it less impactful for all of you. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to you guys at your meeting and be able to answer any questions you got.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Can you go back one to the picture?
Sure can.
Where is your compound going to be?
So I believe in this photograph it would be off to the left. Is that
north?
Is that right, Chief? Yeah, north of Churning Place. Yeah.
How many acres will that be?
I think it's about 4 acres.
Okay. What you got downtown now?
Acre and a half.
Maybe an acre, yeah, it's probably about 400.
Yeah, it's not big enough, quite frankly, to operate a modern wine crew.
Sure. And what is the projected timeline on building it?
The actual construction, it is the next to the last in our program, so it's probably 2025, 2026. Okay. So we're still 9 years out.
Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble?
First of all, I want to thank you for coming out tonight. When I sent the letter, I didn't expect you guys to come out and give a presentation, but it's appreciated. I think, you know, one of the things in my day job, I do a lot of interaction and work with power companies all over the state and have for 18 years. And Snohomish County PUD has always been a great partner. You know, sometimes you can be a victim of your own reliability. You know, people get used to that, you know, always being on, that sort of thing. And, you know, the most recent stuff, I mean, I agree, you know, last year was, for all utilities and communications companies, was just a unbelievable year. You know, in the Spokane area, we saw the 100-year storm over there that knocked out power and stuff for folks for months.
We offered to send help over there.
Oh, yeah?
They didn't even have a place to put them up.
Oh, wow.
They would take the crews. They had the work to do, but they had no place for them to stay. All the hotels, everything was closed.
Yes. We had some of our guys over there, so sorry about that. Took some of your rooms. But I think what, you know, kind of brought on recent, and that's why I really appreciate the reply that you sent, you know, in the email and then the presentation today, was just trying to get an understanding, you know, because we always get, you know, kind of the benefit of the doubt, you know, the acts of God, the weather, you know, storm component. It's really when it gets to it goes out and you sit there and you go, what the hell? It's not raining, it's not, you know, the wind's not blowing, or, you know, or whatever, so, you know, what's the reason behind that? And then, you know, being in the industry, I get the car pole thing, you know, wholeheartedly, but getting the explanation of the, you know, the feed, that was the other component, is that, you know, any time in the past, if there was something, a car pole of that nature, it didn't affect
as many
folks, right? And exactly, and when you start getting phone calls, because it's a Saturday in this, you know, in Monroe, and you got small businesses, they're saying,
wrong that night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was not a good time. So, you know, like I said, sometimes you can be a victim of your own, you know, success, and then the storms don't do you any favor, because that's what aren't people mind. But really, it was those two were really, from a consumer perspective, everybody's saying, hey, there's no storm, there's no, you know, what's the story? So I really appreciate the you know, the totality of your response and explaining. It's good because it helps arm us being able to speak to the issue, you know, to the issues at hand. You know, obviously a lot of my questions were going to go right to, you know, the vegetation. You know, I instantly started asking, okay, well, did we cut funding on, you know, cutting, you know, tree branches when the, you know, the one fell? I said, man, the wind's not blowing, but
funding's never been cut.
I saw that. Yeah.
It's strong. I mean, part of what you're here, so.
Yeah, our funding was down at about $1 million a year. 2004, 2005. When I got to the district, 2009, it was up to about $3 million. And the first thing I did was say, no. The amount of trees we've got in Western Washington, there's no way you can have a tree trimming budget like this. And we ramped it up sharply. And I think it's closer to where it needs to be. We can always do better, and we're always trying to figure out ways to target it better, because you want to get there before the outage. But as you know, one of the problems is you can clear back 15 feet, and then you've got a tree that's 40 feet off that is rotten, you don't know it.
Yep.
And it can be a clear day, and that's the day it decides to give up, and it just guillotines right through the line.
And that's where I'm really excited to see a lot of the news, the stuff on the horizon for the redundancy, and, you know, that's the piece I wanted to be able to be intelligent to, you know, to speak about. So, and then now knowing that because of tyranny plays, tying those together, that makes, you know, a little more sense, because the questions always were, you know, why not downtown? Now we get an understanding of the two substations and how they work. So really appreciate you coming out and being partners as well.
Thank you.
Before we move on, let the record show that Councilmember Hanford entered the chambers at 7:18. Council, any other questions? I want to thank you for the collaboration and for Tourney Place. It's just
thank
wonderful.
You.
So thank awesome. You very much.
That was a great city. Glad to be here.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this.
Appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Next on our agenda, we have a public hearing. and it is AB 16-087, public hearing, ordinance number 003-2016, interim zoning, East Monroe, and resolution number 008-2016, adopt findings in support of ordinance number 003-2016. This is Mr. Osaki. Welcome.
Evening. Mayor Pro Tem Cuttaback and members of the council, on May 3rd, the City Council passed ordinance number 003-2016 as an interim zoning ordinance. And what that interim zoning ordinance did was an expression of the City Council and acknowledgement that during the remand period for the Growth Management Hearing Board phase, that the city recognizes the East Monroe properties as zoned as limited open space. The intent, in part, is just to clarify and remove any uncertainty whatsoever as to what the city considers the zoning of that property is for the public and for the implementation by staff of any questions that may come up regarding that particular piece of property. A couple items regarding state law. The reason we're having our hearing tonight, the state law says that if you pass an interim zoning ordinance and do not have a hearing at that time, the local government needs to have a public hearing within 60 days. So that's the purpose of tonight's public hearing, is to take testimony on ordinance 003-2016. And state law also says that if you do not pass legislative findings at the time the ordinance is passed, that legislative findings need to be passed or considered by the local government immediately after the public hearing. So resolution 008-2016 in your packet tonight is a resolution that would approve and pass legislative findings in support of the adoption of ordinance 003-2016, which again occurred back in May. A couple items: what this ordinance is not, it is not a means of achieving compliance with the Growth Management Hearing Board, and it does not preclude any options whatsoever for the City Council to achieve compliance with the Growth Management Hearings Board. This ordinance is effective for 6 months, so it expires in November of this year, unless it's terminated earlier or extended by the City Council. And up until this point in time, we've received one written comment, or I believe the City Council's received one written comment from Pastor Tom Minnick regarding this particular ordinance tonight. And just to paraphrase, he's indicating he supports the proposed interim zoning classification of this ordinance, but that support is contingent on the fact that the ordinance is intended only as an interim classification. So the requested action tonight is to hold a public hearing, take testimony, close the public hearing, and then pass resolution number 008-2016, which is in your packet. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council, any questions? Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to make sure this is an interim step, right, for Pastor Minnick's comment or question. I assume you have the email there.
What this does is, again, just reaffirms the City's Council's intent that the property is on limited open space. Mm-hmm. And does nothing more. So in that respect, and I don't want to speak for Pastor Minnick, but I believe it does meet what Pastor Minnick is asking for, or is requesting.
My next question would be to the City Attorney. And does it? Is it an interim step?
It's an interim ordinance that the city passed. By its terms, it expires after 6 months. There's an automatic sunset clause in the ordinance. The council is always free to extend the measure at the end of that period, or it's free to repeal it between now and then.
Okay.
So to answer your question directly, it is, by its terms and context and effect, a purely interim measure, and arguably a very redundant one. But again, to your question, it is purely interim.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Council, any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Osaki. At this time, we'll open the public hearing. And at this time, we have one member signed up. Mr. Anderson, do you want to come forward? Good evening. If you could state your name and address for the record, please.
Lowell Anderson, 129 East Rivermont Drive, Monroe, Washington. Thank you for having me. I would love to comment on these issues. Case number 14-3-006C. My comments regarding the East Monroe Ordinance number 002016, interim zoning ordinance confirming limited open space zoning during remand. It's okay with me. However, in my opinion, resolution number 004-2016 should be an approved ordinance ending this debacle. The 57-page April 1st Growth Management Hearing Board of Order finding continuing and noncompliance for a second time is reason enough to end this rezone issue. The Growth Management Hearing Board decision is well-reasoned, prepared by professionals, and is a total slapdown of our opponent's supplemental environmental impact statement. The city ultimately has the authority and obligation to achieve this compliance. Please adopt Ordinance 004-2016 or an equivalent to bring the city into compliance. Thank you. Good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And your time.
We didn't know we only had 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on this issue? Council? Councilmember Gamble?
Move to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
There's been a first and second to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Council? Oh, Councilmember Hanford.
Move to close the public hearing.
Second.
And a first and second to close the public hearing. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Councilmember Hanford.
I'll move to approve resolution number 008-2016, adopting legislative findings in support of interim ordinance number 003-2016, pursuant to RCW 35A.63.220 and RCW 36.70A.390, formally expressing the City Council's acknowledgement and intent regarding the continued designation of the East Monroe area as limited open space following the Growth Management Hearings Board decision in CPS GMHP case number 14-3-0006C and establishing an effective date.
Second.
There's been a first and second on the motion. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next, we'll move on to comments from citizens. This time is set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. And we do have some signed in today, and the testimony is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. Paul and Christina Parker?
I think we're on the wrong signage sheet. We're on new business. We're confused on where to sign in.
Oh, no, this is when to talk.
No, this is it. Yeah, come on up. This is public comment time, so you can speak on any of the items on the agenda that were.
Okay. Oh, we're not under the emissions tax number one?
You can speak on that during this time.
Okay.
So we have more to say on that than we did last week?
It's up to you. Oh, okay. Yeah, this is your time if you want. We are going to have that as a discussion item under new business. Is there anything you would like to say on that item? Now would be the time.
If you guys remember us last week, the 5%, I just, you know, basically it's same thing. A couple things we forgot to mention is that, you know, the City of Monroe has, you know, waived in numerous, we talked to other small businesses and kind of just, you know, talked around town, it's waiving assessments for small business, waiving traffic impact fees, permit fees for downtown, deferring impact fees for developers, changing parking regulations, etc. You know, if the city is truly supporting small business, there must be a way for you guys to decide differential between a small business like ours and a large mega company like a theater. Once again, we're just a small business. We did about $75,000 in the open play money that you guys are interested in. It's where we charge for people to come in. Maybe we can reword that. I don't know. But to pay you guys approximately $4,000 of that dollars. That would become one of our biggest expenses monthly. That's $333 a month. That would be more than we pay pretty much gas, power, cable, internet. It's just a fee that we can't pay, and we're just really looking to the city council to help us out and to understand that, you know, like we talked about last week, I mean, nobody's getting rich here. Christina and I have personally invested we cashed in our 401ks to start this business. Nobody gives you a business loan on an idea. We put ourselves in personal debt. We are unable to buy a home here in Monroe because of our personal credit is saturated with all our business costs, income to debt ratio. Things are finally turning around. It's been 5 years. We're starting to see, you know, the impacts we've had on the community. We've met wonderful people. We've worked with everybody. You know, I think, like we talked about last week, that Jump Around Roll is a real positive place for the community. And this 5%, I mean, I think everybody can understand that 5% is a lot of money. For us, it's going to probably close our doors. We employ 3 high school girls. 2 of them just graduated. You know, minimum wage these days are super expensive. It's just we don't have in the budget. There's no more room for that. We also looked at, you know, the 0.092% that we pay into the tax system. 6.5% that goes to federal. The rest goes to the city taxes. By charging us another 5%, I mean, that's 8% going to the city of Monroe. But we just don't have it. There's also a part in your deal that you guys want us to pay a $15 application fee to pay a fee, and then you guys want to be able to, I say you guys, but the city wants to be able to open up our books. It's just really odd to us that, you know, after 5 years of being a real positive place for families and for the community, you know, we're not a strip club or a gentleman's club or something where stuff's going on in the parking lot and nobody wants in their town. We're a place that people come from all around.
All right, here's 2 of you.
Yeah,
I can just ramble on forever. I mean,
Would you mind taking your full name and address for the record, both of you? That would be great.
Paul Barker.
Good.
Well, do you want the home address?
Yeah.
13737 Hemlock Drive, Southeast, Monroe, Washington, 98272.
Thank you.
That's our residential business. Did you want business?
That's fine.
Okay, so we commented on the citizens, so you guys are going to discuss this? Is that how the agenda works? So
it is on for a discussion item, yeah.
So we sit around. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now move on to the consent agenda, Council. Councilmember Camp.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
There's been a first and second to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. And I believe Ms. Smoot, you're going to read the ordinance into the record?
Yes. Excuse me. Approved through the consent agenda was ordinance number 008-2016. Which disbands the Monroe Library Board, repealing Chapter 2.48, Monroe Municipal Code, Library Board, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
And if I could, who is the second on that?
Also first.
Camp, Councilmember Camp first, Councilmember Davis was the second.
Thank you.
Next, we're moving on to new business, and it's item AB16-089, discussion admissions tax. And I believe this is yours, Ms. Nelson.
Yes, I've attached to your agenda bill all related documents and a copy of the municipal code that pertains to this. Last week's meeting, council asked that this be brought back before it is a discussion item, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have regarding admissions tax.
Councilmember Gamble.
You know, thanks, Diane. When I was reading through, one of the things that jumped out. Sky Valley Dance, are they charged an admission when they have open time to play in their? You know what I'm talking about? The gymnastics. The Sky Valley Gymnastics. I guess, what businesses do we currently have that we're applying the emission tax to?
The Galaxy Theater's the big payer. There's a lot of special event things. For instance, the Pro Wakeboard Tour, when they come through, they pay emissions tax.
Okay.
There's a few smaller ones that I don't know about the dance one. Do they charge it per bench?
Yeah, for the Sky Valley Gymnastics.
Maybe open time.
Yeah, during their open time. I mean, we have this is.
For business license, yeah, I don't know about that one.
I'm just.
Yeah.
You know, what really where we've have we applied it? Is really the only place we've applied it is just Galaxy.
Oh, in the arcade.
The arcade.
Business.
Hill Street, the one.
That's Blink Cafe on Lewis.
That's not a per head though.
But because of their machines, they fall into a category.
No. Not really, because when I read through there, the thing was around charging an admission price. There's not a per head. It's just if you want to purchase tokens.
I believe the code definition talks about for use of machines for. Entertainment value.
Well, wouldn't that apply to any pizza place?
Yeah.
Or any place in the city that has an arcade?
We are, in the past, we just haven't had personnel to go out and audit. And just this year, I finally got personnel that can handle this. And it's our business license person, and she is now doing an internal audit and going through business by business to find out who should be paying.
Yeah, I mean, I just saw Zach hit his button, because the piece I guess I'm hanging up on is it's an admission, where you're paying for admission. I'm not seeing that.
I think the linchpin and the differentiation with respect to your analogy on the pizza place is that most restaurants don't have entertainment being provided as part of the cover charge or privilege of attending. When that is the case, both the state statute that our code is based on and the code itself, I think, apply in that context. But it's intended to serve as a tax on the charge being made for admissions to some place where entertainment or entertainment facilities are present, and that's the reason that people go in the first instance. I also, just for purposes of the discussion and kind of clarify a point, I think it's important to note that the charge here, and Diane can correct me if I'm wrong, is not on the business per se. It's actually on the person who's paying the admission charge in the first case. So the tax that the city applies is not a fee that's imposed on the business. It's the business serves as a conduit, requiring the patrons of the establishment, the people who pay the charge, to then pay this extra amount that gets funneled back to the city. The same, if you look at your receipt, typically when you go to a movie theater, that will show up on your receipt as a separate line item.
It's intended to be passed through.
That's my understanding. It's certainly how the state law reads, and I believe how our local code is intended to operate as well.
So
it's not a fee in the classic sense. It's a pass-through tax that the patrons themselves are intending to pay.
So that makes sense to me. I guess I still am disconnected on the Let's Play Cafe, because we frequent that place, but there's no cover charge, there's no admission, there's no pass-through.
Visible.
No. It's not there. Yeah. I mean, a quarter is a quarter.
I'll have to check with my business license gal. I'm not sure exactly what the determination was there on that one. I thought they were, but I could be.
Maybe they're. Yeah, I would be surprised if they would, because there's no cover charge. Okay. So it's intended to be a pass-through. All right. Thank you.
Administrator Brazel.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. The other place where it will be applicable is Wake Park. And if you recall the discussion during the contract negotiation with them, that was one of the key things that the city was going to receive those emissions tax dollars from the installation of that park.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Just a couple of thoughts. In the packet, it talks about how council's policy decision regarding the emissions tax should ultimately be based upon the public interest. And so when I read that, I have heard from the business owner, my feeling is that anything we can do to help them is based on the public's interest, because there are many families that utilize this business. And so not to say that we're trying to help just them, because I know we can't do that, but just them as in a business like theirs, I think it behooves us to do what we can to I'm looking at number two or number three on our options there. And I'd love to hear from other council members as well, but definitely want to see what we can do to help this type of family business, small business. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I think the you know, the issue becomes, you know, when you, if it's meant to be a pass-through, right, I don't think, you know, the intention is not for them to absorb, you know, the cost, even though it will drive up the price point. I get, you know, I get that from a tax perspective. But the piece is that, you know, we can't, you know, if we change it for them, you got to change it for a Galaxy, so that we would have to know, you know, what's, you know, how much are we bringing in from Galaxy at the point, you know, 05. That would be an interesting, you know, what's the finances associated to that?
I can't tell you an individual business because it's confidential information.
Got it.
But I can tell you that the city gets about $130,000 a year in admissions tax to the general fund. The majority of that is from Galaxy.
And then it would be admissions to Wake Park and that type of thing. Okay. Thank you. So when we're looking at making a, you know, a decision, $3,000, totally get that. But it's a, you know, we would be making it based off of 130 to the greater good. So it would be getting, you know, creative really, or understanding, is there truly a difference, you know, between the two? You know, I personally want to know the difference between some of the questions I just asked, because there's other business entities in the city, I'm almost positive, that have that type of, you know, come play for, you know, X amount of time, you know, type of deal.
I am not aware of them, but I will find out.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Anything else?
Could you use another question?
Yeah.
Regarding what you said. Option number two, that's what that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what addresses what you're concerned with by creating different classes of.
Yes.
So my hope in that is that we can keep the income that's there through larger businesses like Galaxy, but by creating a separate class of business, maybe that will help the situation.
Agreed.
Was that what you meant?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're on the same page.
Okay.
Yeah. How? I would also like to see something, at least more information, or research this a little bit more. And Diane, I guess my question on option three, when we say establish a minimum revenue threshold, do you mean their minimum threshold we would collect in the tax, or their operating revenue?
Operating revenue.
Okay, is it a monthly or an annual operating revenue?
Whatever we would want it to be.
Whatever you want it to be? Okay. Whatever we want it, whatever we decide? Okay. Because I think I see the issue of, you know, I know it's a pass-through, I get that, but when you are a very small business and you have not a big participant base, and then you're upping your charge to the residents or to the people who are coming in, that might affect, you know, the amount of people who do come into a business like that. So, and I do believe that family business like that does add to our community in the public interest, so I think it's worthy of looking at. I don't know what that minimum revenue threshold would be. I don't know if other cities or have done anything like this. Is there any research or indication? Do we know of anyone that's done?
I don't know of any that have a minimum threshold, but I can certainly call around and poll, but in my discussions with other finance directors, I don't know of
any. Okay. Any that have done the categories of business and excluded them from the admissions tax?
Nonprofit versus for-profit.
Okay, and that's where they cut the line on that, nonprofit versus profit. So, okay, those were my comments. Uh-oh, I wasn't paying attention.
Sort by Jay.
So yeah. I am going to allow Councilmember Rasmussen, he has not spoke on this issue.
Yeah, I'm definitely in favor of learning more information, and I guess more so getting some clarity, additional clarity on this, on who's impacted, who's not. And I guess for me, just based off the information that we have and the discussion that we've had so far is, you know, I tend to want to be consistent as much as possible, so that, you know, it's clear when someone goes to read the rules or when an auditor comes. I mean, it's much more clear. In this particular case, the big thing I'm looking at too is, you know, this is obviously a surprise to us, mm-hmm. As well as the business owners, and you know, maybe that's an avenue that we consider as far as if there's anything that we can help in those 2 months of the emission taxes that haven't been paid, if there's anything that we can do to help that, along those lines. I mean, just try and explore options out there to whatnot, but I'm interested in hearing more, get more clarity, but then
what exactly can I get for that?
So, you know, kind of as you know, Councilmember Gamble was referring to earlier, as far as the types of businesses that would qualify or that would have to pay for this tax, the arcade, for instance. You know, there's
It's an ongoing operation of us auditing and going through every business in the city. So, give you the list of who we identified so far, but it's just one person in part of her time going through. So, it's like we consider it like a 3-year process, but it'll take her to go through all the businesses. But I can give you what we've got so far.
Okay. Anything else, Councilmember?
No.
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, so I mean, I'll give you what I'm looking for, Diane, just to get a better understanding. Yeah. You know, I would like to see, because some of it's a, you know, surprise, you know, type of deal, but like what is Arlington? If I look at Arlington, Snohomish, Everett, Lake Stevens, Marysville, Woodinville, and the county, right? I know I just rattled off a bunch, but basically right around us, you know, what are the admission, you know, what's the rate there, right? Are we out of line? Are we out of bounds, you know, in what we're charging? You know, just kind of having an understanding there where the delineation is, you know, between, you know, we're saying profit, you know, or whatever, but just double checking to make sure that they don't have any other sort of, you know,
okay, so you want
switch. Yeah, absolutely comparables, because, you know, to the point that was brought up, you know, hey, we do want to attract, you know, this type of business. So if right around us it is a lot easier to start a very like you know, service, then we want to make sure that we're being competitive as a city from that perspective. So that's what I would be looking for.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, that makes sense clear.
Okay, great.
The attorney.
And then also, just for the council's clarification, the state statute governing admissions tax does establish the tax amount, the maximum tax amount that can be levied in this context. So I would be very surprised if there is a significant disparity as between the various cities who have adopted a tax like this.
Good to see.
Are you finished? Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Okay, so what I'm, if I'm understanding correctly, we're directing staff to explore options and existing proceed or existing policies in surrounding environments regarding admissions tax, and asking them to find out about exemptions for classes as detailed in option two? Is that what we're directing staff to do?
Well, we're hearing from, but it sounds like council members would like to look at option two,
okay.
Or I mentioned option three to look at, do we set a minimum threshold where you
right,
charge a tax?
Okay, that's, I just want to make sure I was clear.
It's two and three together. I mean,
yeah.
I think, I know we're talking out of turn, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'll yield. No,
okay. Yeah, I guess all I want to, like, you know, I was saying is that are we that far out of bounds with this 0.05, right? So kind of combining
okay.
two and three. So we discover, hey, are we? And if we are, well, then we probably should be taking some direction of establishing, or maybe it's establishing minimum or reducing the rate or whatever the min is or whatever. You know, what are our options, I guess? What are the levers that we can pull? That's what I want to know.
Councilmember Camp, you still have the
floor. Okay, thank you. Thanks, that clarified it. The other thing I'm curious about is you're just getting people looking, or a staff member part-time looking into people who are charging, who should be or have been charging the admissions tax, right? So we don't have a complete list.
Yeah, we're doing an internal audit. Yeah.
Right, so, but we do have some big payers.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any legal exposure with this?
Counselor,
and because we're
charging some, not others.
Charging some, not charging others. And
I don't think that's a strong basis for challenge. I mean, if the council would like to have an in-depth discussion regarding legal vulnerabilities, my recommendation would be to do that in executive session
exactly.
for obvious
okay.
reasons. But generically, answer your question. Simply because the city might not be aware of a particular entity that would otherwise be subject
okay.
to a particular tax, that's a fairly good faith
mm-hmm.
Defense to that, and I don't see a huge vulnerability in that context.
Okay. What I'd like to see, in addition to the other information that Councilmember Gamble has suggested, is we get a complete list of who should or who should not be. I don't know how long that will take, but I'd like to see what the whole problem is, or the whole issue is, before we start making blanket decisions and coming up with a procedure to handle this. That's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough.
I think the crux of both Councilman Gamble and Councilman Camp's idea is we need to know who we ought to be charging that we're not, in order to justify charging these people, and on the same token, who's paying, because if they're paying and nobody else is, they have an argument, and if we ask them to pay and other people aren't paying, then they have an argument. So I think that's what Councilman Camp is asking, in my opinion. So if I'm wrong, say so. Otherwise, I think we need to know that information to make an intelligent decision on that.
The only thing I would add is, are we in the charging the right amount?
That's
the other piece. I mean, are we doing this right?
So basically what we're saying is this pass-through tax of 5%, you basically charge $8 a head to come in and jump. You're either only getting $7.60 because of the pass-through tax, or you're going to have to charge $8.40 to get that money to send it on to the city. Is that what is that how you're tabulating all this?
Yes. Okay. We're already at point where we need to raise the prices, and so going from 7 to 8 and then giving you 45 cents of that we just bumped up, we would have to bump up more. And
yes,
got it.
Okay, thank you.
Diane,
thank you, Diane.
Do any cities have a revenue threshold where they do 5% admissions tax for this much revenue, 1% for, you know, this amount? Do any have, because I could see where, yeah, just based on operating revenue, because that way the smaller business would they might be able to charge that, pass that through, like a 1% versus a 5%, but someone like the Galaxy Theater has a huge number of people come through and on a high operating revenue, the 5% truly is a pass through and doesn't affect them.
I don't know of any, but like I will do it. You know, I'll find out what the other cities are doing. So
okay. Okay. Council, any other questions, or Councilmember Hanford?
So I feel like we have a good plan of action. In the meantime, we still have a concern that, well, I don't know, was there a due date that?
June 30th, I think our first payment, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, a year ago, our business license gal contacted them, and at that time, they told her that they were not charging a fee. And then she looked on their, recently looked on their website and saw that they were, and so this isn't a new thing, and this is with this particular business, but
it is on us. We have to talk to them.
Them to comment.
Oh, okay. I'll send you the correspondence that I've got. So, it, you know, it's up to council, I guess, to decide when it should have started.
My only concern is we have a plan of action. But I just want to make sure that we, the city, have communicated something to the business so that they know how to respond. In the meantime, while we're doing all this research.
Right.
Would you yield?
Yeah.
I asked Diane this last week about whether or not they were out of compliance or whatever, and whether or not it would have an impact. You said it was because there's a dispute, there's no charge at this time, or at least they're not collecting the fee at this time. But if I'm understanding correctly, are we looking at retroactive admission charges, or?
I would not look at retroactive.
I think that was the gist of what I got last week. So I think that answers your question. I don't think we have a hard and fast cutoff date, and I really think we need to have more information about the whole scope of the problem before we start making these procedural plans.
Yeah, that's all we have. Next week for you.
Perfect.
Councilmember Camp, did you have something else?
That was all I was
going to say. So, Diane, do you feel like you have enough direction and you're able to bring information back to us next week and we can add that on the agenda? Okay.
Thanks, Diane.
Thank you.
That was a lot thrown at you.
Thank you
for coming back.
Okay, we now move on to final action. First item is AB 16090, ordinance number 009-2016, amending MMC 20.12, transportation impact fees, first and final reading. And probably Brad. It's Brad.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We brought this to the council a couple times in the past few months. This was talking about encouraging economic development in Truth and Row for people changing the use of the building. Currently, right now, when someone changes the use of the building, or actually before the interim ordinance is passed, they would be assessed additional transportation impact fees. The interim ordinance that was passed in April, I believe it was, said that those were changing the definition of development activity to which transportation impact fees are charged to take out change of use. We had a public hearing for the Planning Commission regarding this. The Planning Commission's recommendation was to add, if there was a substantial change of use, which we defined as 50% building permits worth 50% of the value of the building, that would be considered a substantial change of use, and that would be part of the definition of development activity, which would require the payment of additional transportation impact fees. That was brought to the council 2 weeks ago, and the council seemed to agree with that, and so the ordinance was written with that language, so that if the council chooses to adopt that tonight, and the reason it's for first and final reading tonight is the interim ordinance expires on July 5th, and so if you adopted a new ordinance tonight, it would be in place in time to go into effect when the other one expired. Does this still require the payment of transportation impact fees for new businesses and for any construction activity that expanded the size of a building or the expanded the size of the use? You still be paying transportation impact fees. And if there's any questions, I'd like to answer them.
Councilmember Camp?
No question, but I move to waive council rules of procedure requiring two readings of ordinances.
Second.
The motion has been made by Councilmember Camp, seconded by Councilmember Davis, to waive council rules of procedure requiring two readings of ordinances. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Passes 7-0. Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. I also would like to move to adopt upon first and final reading ordinance number 009-2016, amending Chapter 20.12 MMC, Transportation Impact Fees, clarifying the applicability of transportation impact fees to development activity involving changes of use, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date and a five-year sunset period.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Camp, seconded by Councilmember Davis. Any questions? Brad, I did have one question. It's stated in here the city engineer may use his or her sole discretion to adjust the standard impact fee at the time the fee is imposed in consideration of unusual circumstances in specific cases to ensure that the impact fees are imposed fairly. What would be an unusual circumstance?
Hard to say. That's not a change. That's been in there since the original ordinance was put in place.
Okay.
And it could actually be for these kind of situations, but this is actually, you know, making it clear to people who want to do development activity in Monroe that, you know, they are not charged. If they're just doing a change of use, it doesn't involve a large amount of change to the construction of the building.
Okay. In the documents, it was highlighted bold, just like the other changes, so that's why it stood out to me. I didn't know if that was, just as we changed substantial and substantial change in use, was that in there bold, underlined?
Oh, it's because the numbering was changed.
Just the numbering?
Yeah.
Okay. City attorney?
For the council's clarification, that clause is essentially almost verbatim from the state statute governing impact fees. So our ordinance is essentially required to have a provision to that effect in it.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
The only question I had on the 50%, just remind me how we came up with that number. It just seemed like it was a good number because basically you're half the assessed value.
It's the number that's used in most of our codes for, like, when you have to put fire sprinklers in and things like that. When you work on the building that's more than 50% of the value, then basically you have to come into compliance with the rest of the codes.
So then actually that's why I was asking the question, because the piece that if you're submitting permits to actually bring the building up, you know, you're doing code improvements that you really don't have to do because it's grandfathered. Do we really want to? I mean, I guess I don't want to put it in place where they wouldn't do that, those code improvements, because it would put them over 50%. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that I'm looking at, is because it would be potentially an older building. If they wanted to do additional improvements, they would bring it up, you know, more to code. But that level of permitting would put them past the 50%. You know, one of the cheap ways out would just be to cut back on improvement in codes so that they could be under the 50% and not have to do the change. So that was, you know, I don't know. I know I'm probably splitting hairs there, but I'm just seeing that I wouldn't want to lose that. I mean, if it could go over 50%, as long as it's over, you know, that those additional over 50% are for code improvements to the building structure. It was just a thought.
Okay. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Council, any other questions or discussion? So we have a motion on the table. Was first Councilmember Camp, seconded by Davis. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Our next item is item number 2 under final action, AB 16-091, resolution number 009-2016, approving 2017 to 2022 transportation improvement plan. And I'd have to guess this is probably Brad.
You had a public hearing on this issue last week, and the reason we had this
split and not the same day in case any changes came up as part of the public hearing that did. So this is what was presented to you in March, and the same thing that was had the public hearing on last week. So we're asking that you pass this resolution to keep us in compliance with the state law. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Councilmember Hanford.
I move to approve resolution number 009-2016, adopting a six-year transportation improvement program for years 2017 to 2022.
Second.
There's a first by Councilmember Hanford, a second by Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion? Brad, I just had one question on number 11. It was the Chain Lake Phase 2A multipurpose trail. Is that what we're currently?
We're currently working on Woods Creek Road.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
This is what we, basically the continuation of the sidewalks that go up from the roundabout to the farm.
Right.
On the west side. And we've received grant money to do the design up to Brown Road, and we're in contention for the money for construction right now.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. That was it. Okay, we had a motion on the table, first by Councilmember Hanford, second by Councilmember Rasmussen. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. You guys are going to love me because we're whipping through this.
Keep whipping.
Okay.
Aww.
Okay, we're moving on to council member reports. First is City Council Transportation Public, let's just say P4. This is Councilmember Davis.
And I was absent today. Did we meet?
Yeah.
At a quorum?
Yeah.
Councilmember Rasmussen, did you have a report?
Yep. So it was a quick meeting for the P4 committee today. One topic that we discussed was preliminary proposal for traffic improvement, and that was speaking to the intersection of Blueberry and Kelsey, the T Street there, just I guess south of the railroad tracks are on Kelsey. If anyone's been on that intersection, knows how congested it gets, and how some drivers treat that intersection. So Chief Quisner brought forth a proposal which we'll have at the July 12th meeting, council meeting, just discussing the possibility of putting a barrier in the street to prevent a left-hand turn onto Blueberry from Kelsey, or from Blueberry turning left onto Kelsey. So that was the primary topic, or the only topic of discussion before committee, and so that'll come on July 12th. And Chief, for Brad, you want to add anything to that? Councilmember Scarborough?
Only, do you tell people where they can get that picture? Somewhere online that they can...
Oh, I thought you were passing it around.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, pass it.
Thank you, Ben.
It's passing around. Other than that, next meeting is July 19th, and that's all we had.
Any questions for Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, thank you. That intersection has been a concern for quite a while, and I look forward to hearing the report.
July 12th.
I look forward to hearing that and seeing the different ideas. I was wondering if the committee would also look at the options of the one-way idea. If you remember, if you go back with me a few years now, Arizona and Brad, I think, had to come up with the one-way idea, trying to get through maybe work with the school and Catholic Church to get part of their land as a right-of-way to make a main thoroughfare east to west. And, you know, the reception was pretty negative by the Catholic Church and I think the school district for that. However, still the idea of making it a one-way so that you can leave Fred Meyer, go across the railroad tracks, and you're forced to take a ride on the Blueberry, and it's one way from on Blueberry all the way until the next, I think it's King Street, is the next third street that goes all the way up to the, I don't remember the next street.
King to Columbia.
Yeah. And then Columbia would go that way, and then Kelsey would, from that corner on, would be one way going towards Fenmeyer. I think that would be a great option, possibly. I just love to throw that on the table. I used to, when I worked down in Renton years ago, for years, they had one-ways all over the place, and yeah, it's frustrating when you come out and you can't take a left or right, but it's, you easily get over it, and the locals get used to, okay, you can't take the right there anymore, you can't take the left there anymore. So I'm definitely open to that. My concern is with this development that's going on. I quit going from the Fry Islands on Blueberry to try to take that impossible left. I just stopped doing that a long time ago because it's so frustrating. And so, just telling you. Was I talking too long?
That was the timer.
3 minutes?
Yield to a question?
3 minutes. Yeah.
May I do that?
So your suggestion is that we look at that street that went behind the Catholic Church and took part of the ball fields. You want that to be one way between King and Kelsey, and then Kelsey one way from that point to to Highway 2?
Yeah, so
is that the
original idea was to try and work with them on obtaining the land and right of way.
Right.
I'm saying, and that was negatively opposed. So I'm saying, let's not worry about trying to get any more right of way. Let's just make the streets one way going through there. So yeah, it would be one way all the way up to that intersection. And then you'd have two lanes going across Highway 2.
Right.
And you'd have just one coming from Fred Meyer's side.
Thank you.
I can see the chief is just real. He's looking forward to this.
There.
Anything else, Councilmember Hanford?
Thank you.
Moving on to council member reports. Councilmember Scarborough?
Nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
Happy Father's Day. Belated to everybody up here. Hope you had a good one. I spent mine 6:15 a.m. at Phil Johnson Ballfields in Everett for a baseball tournament. Beating the dead horse at that time of year. But again, showcasing what a park system or a, you know, a ball field system that is all turfed across can withstand a monsoon that we had on Saturday. It was unbelievable. There was flowing rivers in downtown, you know, Everett, and they were still able to get the games, all, you know, the totality of the tournament in on Sunday because of, you know, having the turf fields and just what an asset it is. There was people there from, you know, all over Canada, you know, Blue League baseball teams, and we went and ate at the local Subway and stuff just down the street, and they just basically said, yeah, I mean, from as soon as baseball season starts, April or whatever, until the end of the summer, they just make their living off of, you know, the commerce that comes in, because they have a tournament every weekend, and now they will be showcasing and will be showcasing the District 1 All-Star tournaments for the different age groups. So anyway, it just kind of showed. I mean, our Parks Department does an amazing job, and they were this weekend as well, because I know we had a tournament, you know, out there as well. Fortunately, we had a few, I mean, unfortunately for the baseball club, we had teams drop out, so we didn't have as many games, so we were able to you know, get them in on the fields that we could make playable. But it did just kind of reiterate that that the more we can, you know, beat to that drum of getting to where, you know, through partnerships and stuff to get Lake Tai turfed, you know, the high school fields and then the Miracle Oak field, that we'll get to the point where we'll be able to have that as an asset for us as well. So that's it. Oh, and then happy first day of summer for all your kids.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Well, the rain couldn't keep the triathlon away, so Prime Monroe was...
They swam on the street.
No, they still rode their bikes.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't have to cancel. They're not baseball players. You asked for it.
No.
Tri Monroe, hands down, was amazing. Brad, you and your teams, Mike, Farrell, Parks Department, outstanding. You know, I had the privilege of working with the race directors and coordinating volunteers with them, and it was just so much fun being out down there in the middle of the ball and watching everything work and take place and just go off just click after click. It was incredible. Athletes, there were, what I hear, 258 actual registered or checked in. We hosted the team meetings and the packet pickups at the Boys and Girls Club and where they checked in, and there were 258 athletes confirmed. Five countries represented that came to Monroe, and it was really cool. There, you know, two big things I wanted to share with council was the chamber was at the packet pickup meetings, had their table all set up and had restaurant flyers as well as pick sheets of all the businesses, and constantly throughout the night, you know, athletes, parents, coaches coming up to their table, you know, there's nothing to do here, what can I do, and they were just quick to say, here's a great place to go eat, oh, you need to pick up equipment, we got Big Five Sporting Goods, you know, where's your hotel. I mean, it was awesome. And, you know, these people that would normally have gone to Woodinville or Everett were shown the options to stay here in Monroe, which was spot on. I heard actually the next day from Denise from the Parks Department that she went into Toscano's just in time to get a table, because afterwards 40 athletes came walking in to eat. So I'm hopeful that every restaurant was like that on Friday night.
Great.
Saturday, I had a chance to talk to a few of the parents of the athletes, and actually one of them was from Dallas, Texas, and this was their first time competing in Monroe, but he was part of the team that's been up here all 6 years, and you know, she was saying that they just love coming here and the venue that we have, because it's all right here, and you can literally be at the gazebo watching the swim, and then be out, 500 feet away on the side of the road to watch the cycling as well as the running. And you're all just right there. You don't have to go very far to catch each different leg of the event or anything like that. It's just all right there. So kudos to our community for hosting this, and Brad and Mike, again, your teams, Gene, city staff. It was awesome, even with the weather the way it was. Those kids came out and competed and put on an awesome show, and I look forward to having them back next year.
Great. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, just our annual business meeting for the Association of Washington Cities Conference. Our business meeting is Thursday for myself, Councilmember Camp, and Councilmember Rasmussen. Thursday at 4:00. That's it. And I'll be attending the whole conference. We got checked in today, and I'll be starting it on tomorrow. So.
Great. Thank you. I attended the... Did you have something else, Councilmember Rasmussen?
If yes. I can ask a question on that. So, Liz and Gina, send an email in regards to the conference as far as the Thursday meeting and the voting. Because I'm going to have to leave early. I wasn't sure if it was going to be better to try to find a replacement, or I just hadn't heard back.
I think you could go either way on that one. I don't know what they're, you know, I think if you looked at the agenda, you kind of see, but I'm not quite sure when their votes are going to be taking place.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard to say how much of it you'll be able to be there, but of course, if you're not there, you can't proxy. So I think it would be up to you to decide, or if someone else wanted to go in your stead.
So, you know, if I'll certainly open up to the rest of the council if someone else wanted the opportunity to go. The Thursday for the voting, I do have to, I am still planning to go unless someone else wants to go, but I just have to leave at 5. I'm not sure kind of when that voting's taken place, so if there's another council member that would rather attend, I'd be happy to give my spot to them. Otherwise, I'll continue to go.
Just to, if I could just give the time, it's 4 o'clock to 5:45 at the Edward Hanson Conference Center, Xfinity Arena.
Yeah.
Did you look at that, Jeff?
The 4 to 5:45 and not a whole lot of detail within that as far as where the votes are coming, so.
Yeah. It looks to me, from looking at the agenda, like the voting takes place from, I mean, it's call to order, administration, and then the statements, and then it looks to me like number 5 is election of officers and directors, so they might be voting by 5, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Councilmember Rasmussen, did you have something else?
Okay.
And I can attend, I think, on Thursday if you can't, so we can talk after.
Okay.
Please let me know if it's possible, because we actually have to register you for that to attend.
Okay, yeah. I'll let you know. So Saturday I attended the last Miracle League game, and they have said that after 17 years, they've never canceled a game due to rain, so that's a great thing. It was a great game, and the Legends baseball team came out, and the kids love it when the other kids come out and play, and the fire district was there also, and they did a great job because it was pouring, and everybody was still out there, so it was wonderful to see. And then I attended the 5:22 meeting with Gene up at the county, which Gene will report on. Administrator Brazel will get that straight. So I think that's it. City staff reports go around the... I'm about to say Chris back there. Diane, did you have anything else?
Nothing tonight.
Mr. Osaki, Dave?
Just real quick, last week the building permits for Park Place Middle School went out the door, and all I can say is that required a substantial amount of work cutting across all the different departments in the fire district to review those. And my sense is you will see a pretty noticeable jump in permit fee revenue just because of that single project.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Thank you.
Really exciting. Yeah, that's exciting for the community. Thank you. Chief?
Nothing to say.
Why are you dressed up?
I'm the representative for the Snohomish County Police Chiefs and Sheriff's Association, and I had to attend a legislative committee meeting in Olympia, if you needed to know.
All right, thank you. We needed to know.
TMI.
Brad, did you?
Just one thing, as I've told you in the past years, and I think Councilmember Campus attended, it's the Amateur Radio Field Day on Saturday. It's coming up Saturday, so yeah. We always like to have elected officials come and see what's going on.
Well,
so
tell them why. Tell them why you want elected officials.
Because you get extra points.
Yes.
You get extra points. So
I've made it a point of going there every year so that they get their picture and they put it somewhere and they get points.
And that's so it will be on Lake Tai on Saturday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
And if I could add, it's really interesting seeing how they have that bus.
The bus died. The bus died. The bus needs a new engine, and we can't afford the $62,000 for a new engine.
Oh, okay, so what are you using?
There's going to be a gazebo.
Oh, okay. No. It's just really interesting when they show you the whole their communication network and
cool.
And hear some of the stories. It's fascinating every year. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for reminding me, Brad.
That's all I have.
All right. Well, that's certainly enough. Ms. Smoot? Anything?
Nothing. Thank you.
Jean?
Thank you. This week I attended the Park Place groundbreaking ceremony and Pam Baker joined me. That was a great turnout. They had all the kids from the school come out and it was a lot of fun. It's going to be an amazing project and go have a look at the building right now because it'll be gone by probably this time next week. So it's going to move fast and they got a lot of work happening. They've already stripped the sod off the fields behind it. You got big massive piles back there. There were some cost savings that came on board because the topsoils that they need for the project, this particular contractor happened to have it on another job and already hauled it in. So you'll see that big pile behind the buildings right now as well. And then Mayor Pro Tem mentioned that we were at the 522 corridor meeting last week. That was well attended, and representatives from the US 2 coalition were there as well. And we had, was Hans there?
No, he had a representative.
That's right, he did. And so we had a good meeting. In fact, DOT's taking the lead. They're going to be sending some information out, and they're basically putting a group of selected individuals that will continue to meet on a routine basis to try and push funding for the 522 improvements that we had talked about. The Sketch Corridor program is up and running, so they highlighted some of the details of that. And we do have a handout. If this is of interest, I can certainly scan this and email it to everybody. It tells you what the Corridor Sketch program is. And it's what, $1 million for the whole state. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the numbers that was misrepresented or misheard, and it's $1 million for that program, but that's for statewide. However, the legislators did put a priority on 522, so it's basically make that happen and then use some money elsewhere, whatever's left. So that's about it on that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
And the last thing I have,
I believe Liz emailed it out today. This was some information from the Snohomish County Health District, and we've all been following their struggles for financing that particular organization. And so what they are proposing is to charge the county and the small cities $2 per resident annually to support the Snohomish County Health District services. So this was sent out via email. I have hard copies if you'd rather have those. That's okay. All I have.
Jean, when you said small cities, did I hear you say that right? Or
cities.
Just cities in general?
Yeah,
okay.
Have it on there.
Okay.
To talk about impact, this is like $35,000 impact to the city.
Yeah.
Under this current population, and we suspect our population will be a larger number here real shortly. So.
Councilmember Scarborough?
So you just said they're proposing to charge. I thought when we were first hearing this, it was a request to cities to kind of donate that or agree to pay it. Is there a difference in those two things?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I can speak to that. So this is a being proposed to the Snohomish County Health Board currently. We reviewed this last week. And so it's just... In the past, they've kind of floated this idea to the city saying, hey, would you be willing to pay $1, $2 per capita? Now they're basically coming forward and saying, we're in a bind. You know, this to us is going to make a huge impact. We're going to be coming to you to make that request. And, of course, it's up to the individual cities to say yes, no, something different or whatnot. So that's all it is right now. It's just kind of a heads up that a request is coming. And as mentioned last week, there's some concerns that I personally have on it from the health board level. But I would certainly entertain the idea of actually having Dr. Goldbaum and Pete Mayer come to a council meeting to present and to discuss the health district and the impacts that this has.
And if he comes to speak, he'll tell us what this $2 a head is going to pay for? Mm-hmm. Is this going to pay for homeless? Is this going to pay for drug prevention? Is this going to pay for drug drop sites and that sort of? Those are the questions I'd have. What's our $35,000 going to buy for the citizens of Monroe?
Right. Yeah, he'd be able to explain in more detail.
Okay.
Exactly what the money is going to be would be used for, where it's allocated.
Councilmember Rasmussen?
Hope that was.
Okay. Did you have anything else? So we are at Monroe this week. So we have a couple items in the in your report. Finance report. Diane, did you want to say anything? It's there for information only.
Yes.
I thought it was great to see that year-to-date last year compared to this year for sales tax was an increase of about $150,000. So that's good news. So. And then we have downtown decorative lighting. Any staff report on that? Is that just a verbal, it says?
Yeah, just to my knowledge, we haven't received any donations to date. So if council wants to have staff bring forward a motion to utilize contingency funds to put that together, just let us know whenever you would like to do that, or we continue to search for donations.
Councilmember Scarborough?
You said you were going to talk to the Chamber of Commerce and see if they were going to go door to door and solicit donations. Is that still a possibility, or are they doing it, or do you know?
I don't know about the Chamber. I believe the Downtown Association is going to look into that, and I haven't heard an update.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And we also have Monroe this week, and you're in the agenda. There's documents there. And we're on to draft agenda for June 28th, 2016.
Yeah, announcements and... Oh, excuse me. Stand corrected. We will be looking at council seating arrangements right out the gate. Thank you for that. Then we'll have a proclamation regarding Parks and Recreation Month, which is July. The consent agenda, and then under new business, we will have authorized Mayor Pro Tem to sign the fair traffic agreement with Snohomish County. And then Evergreen Heights, final plat, PRD. And then we'll be looking at admissions tax again.
Mm-hmm.
Under final action, we'll have authorized mayor to sign agreement for outdoor sculpture. That's the downtown sculpture. And we need to circle back with Mike and find out where we're at on that. So if that's not there next week, it's because it wasn't ready, but we're hoping to have that ready to go. And then we have the resolution amending the 2016 fee schedule. Any additions or deletions?
And your pro tem next week too.
Any additions or deletions on long term?
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I will be absent on the July 19th meeting, and also not at the potentially scheduled P4 committee meeting that night either. I'll be out of town.
Okay. We don't need an executive session. At this time, we don't need an executive session, so we have a motion to adjourn.
Second.
There's been a motion by Councilmember Gamble and seconded by Councilmember Rasmussen to adjourn. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Good evening.
Good evening.
Council members.
I forgot about that.